Ya.
Good morning, sir.
Can you please flight the agenda? Must call it before I make the official openings of this meeting.
Okay, chair, let me do just now. Can you see it from your side, chair?
Yeah, I can see. Yes, I can see. Let me welcome all the honorable members of the committee and the members of the staff to this portfolio committee of today, whose intention really is to receive briefing on the submission of that bill ease of doing business. We have some people who are supporting that bill who will be making their submission to the committee. Can I check if there are any apologies for today's meeting, Ms. Toll?
Yes, Jefferson, good morning to honorable members. We have apology from Honorable Cebekhulu, Honorable Komane, and Honorable Maluleke. That's all for now, Jefferson. Thank you.
Thank you very much. As we stand now, is this meeting correct in terms of the attendance?
Thanks, sir. No, it is fine, Jefferson. We can continue with the meeting. We are fine with
Okay.
the
Okay. I don't know who will start. Is it those people who are supporting this ease of business bill? I will, or we will it depend on Mr. Kruger to introduce them.
Thank you, Chair. I think the first presentation will be from SBI. Now, SBI is a small business institute, and John will do the presentation. We honor to do the presentation for us. So if John is on this platform, we can ask him to start with presentation. And then after him, I will introduce the next speaker, if it's all right with you, Mr. Chair.
It's all right, Mr. Kruger. Can he immediately take the platform there?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairperson, and greetings to all the honorable members of this committee. And I have asked the secretary of the committee to run the presentation. As soon as he's ready, I'm happy to start. But I can just say briefly, we appreciate the opportunity of being invited to this forum. We think it's very important and would also like to congratulate, I think, the spirit and enthusiasm of members to bring private members' bills. So, Mr. Chairman, my presentation really is about the comments we have on the bill, which we broadly support, but we've got a few concerns as well. But before I do so, let me just say who we are as the Small Business Institute and what we stand for. And I'll give you a few examples of our work as well. So the Small Business Institute is a non-profit organization that exists to positively influence the environment for small businesses in South Africa. And we are a 75-year-old organization. I think that would be in the next slide, Mr. Secretary. we exist to positively influence the business environment for SMEs in South Africa, both informal sector ones as well as the formal sector SMEs. And then today we'll make preliminary comments on the ease of doing business bill. And then, so our key messages really are to say that we broadly support the bill. It's a first step in the right direction towards achieving the president's aspiration of improving our performance as far as the ease of doing business is concerned. As you know, in his 2019 State of the Nation address, the president was concerned about the deterioration over the last few years as far as the ease of doing business is concerned. So we think this is the first major step towards that direction. We do support the bill. However, we do have some concerns as well. And we have shared a document with you, which is one of our latest research. The document is called Tackling the Disabling Environment in South Africa. It's really talking to the issue of red tape and the ease of doing business, which is the core focus of this bill. And we've shared this document with the members of the committee. So as I said, our mandate is to speak out for almost all, not only the members of SBI, but also the broader SME committee, SME ecosystem in South Africa, whether it is formal or informal sector ones. And our members of Business Unity South Africa will also participate actively in the president's public private growth initiative. And we've got MOEs with the Franchise Association, Ethics Institute, AgriSA, this South African Local Government Association. And we're an organization that is on a transformation journey. If you look at the next slide, this is our board of directors chaired by Mr. Sipho Nkosi. And in terms of our MOI, Memorandum of Incorporation, we are supposed to have 50% gender and race balance. The next slide, I think, talks to the executive team, which is really a very small team made of myself, General Manager Leandro Swart, and Kinan Pade, who's responsible for recruiting members, the chambers. So we really represent two sets of members. Firstly, we represent chambers of commerce, and then we've got hundreds of SMEs that are directly affiliated to us. And we have about 15 chambers that represent the informal sector economy, whether it be in the villages or in the townships. And this is one segment that is growing very fast. So we speak both for the informal sector economy as well as the formal sector economy. And in between all the chambers, the 75 chambers that we represent, we represent about 114,000 small businesses in South Africa. A week ago, we signed up the Pan-African Chamber of Commerce, which has got about 3,000 members, which basically means that we now have an African, Pan-African footprint. The next slide talks to the chamber movement and affiliated business chambers and the policy dialogues that we have. We call them Indavas, where we continue the work of advocating for small businesses. Our work really is made up of two things. The first one is to advocate based on the lived experiences of SMEs, what we hear from them, what they tell us. And then the second element of that is made up of the research. The latest research that we have done has been around helping SMEs to prepare for a quick recovery after COVID. I'll return in 5 seconds to that issue. But in the last few years, since we changed our name into the Small Business Institute with a core focus on small businesses in South Africa, we have been working on 3 or 4 campaigns. The first campaign has been to try and lobby government to implement and Gazette, Section 18 of the Small Business Act. What that section talks to, it says it essentially makes every minister of government a minister of small business by saying that when government departments or agencies contemplate a new legislation, they must do an impact assessment on small businesses, whether it's regulation, policies, or legislation. It's not been done since 1995-96 when the National Small Business Act came into effect. The second campaign that we've been running has been to encourage both the private sector, big business, as well as state-owned enterprises and government departments to pay SMEs on time. This is a silent killer of SMEs. You delay their payments, you drag them to 90 days, or in certain instances, you take about 6 months until they take you to court. You really kill small businesses. You kill job creation, you kill growth. We've been lucky enough to have gained traction on this campaign last year. We managed to persuade through Business for South Africa about more than 50 large corporates in South Africa to commit to paying SME suppliers on time. And during COVID, we asked them to advance, where they have long-standing relationships, to advance the 50% of invoices when they have prior knowledge and long experience with the supplier to ease with cash flow. And then as members within, as affiliates of Booster, we are being charged with leading the SME committee on Booster, which interfaces with government as well as government, labor, and the community constituency within NEDLAC. So our job there is to mainstream the SME agenda. Here are some of the topics that we've we've worked on. We're lucky enough to have a bit of money from one of the mining companies, Exxaro, a year ago, and we commissioned research into about six topics: the impact of COVID, digitalization, formalization and formalism, the role of local champions, champions of commerce, business organizations, how to tackle the disabling environment, which I think is a core focus and of relevance to this committee, and then the localization conundrum. Those we released a month ago, and we are in conversation with the Department of Small Business Development and all the social partners within NEDLAC. The next slide really talks to the an example of our other work about the size, shape, and form of the small business segment of the economy. And the key stats there is the one that talks to 98.5% of our economy is made up of small businesses, and yet they only contribute about 28% of jobs. So really, these are our roles that we should be treating and mollycoddling if we have to achieve the NDP aspiration that by 2030, 90% of jobs must come from the small business segment of the economy. Now, Mr. Chairperson, through your good offices, I now turn to our views about the bill. Generally speaking, we broadly support the spirit of the bill. As I said, it's in keeping with the aspiration of improving the business environment and the ease of the enabling environment for business in South Africa, as aspired not only by the president, but by all patriotic South Africans. And one of the things that we would like some kind of careful, we appreciate why the member, the sponsor of the bill, would want to locate the authority in the presidency. However, what we think effort must go into, the effort must go into ensuring that we avoid duplication, because Section 18 resides in the Small Business Development Department. Now, if we have another unit that goes, that seeks to do the same thing, but is located somewhere else, we might end up with unnecessary turf wars. So I'd like us to sort of pay more consideration to where it is located. And then, of course, being the voice, big voice of small business, we would like to have a very explicit and core focus on SMEs as the backbone of the economy, so that we are in line with the aspiration of the NDP, which is our economic blueprint for now as a country. Now, here's the key point that we'd like to make. Our preference is for an RIA approach, a regulatory impact assessment, instead of the SAS. We think that we'll have better outcomes through the RIA. About 60 countries around the world are doing it. It provides transparency, early engagement on drafting policies, feedback and lobbying, and avoids delays versus the SAS approach. We think the SAS approach is selective on consultation and got inverted priorities. Small businesses' growth are sort of further down in the list of issues to be considered. And so we'd really like to urge that we return to the RIA focus. As I said, we would like to propose, and this is proposed in the paper that we submitted as a pre-read, Tackling the Disabling Environment. We'd like to propose a red tape challenge where we provide SMEs with time and space to say what their pain points are. We shouldn't reinvent the wheel in this regard. Other countries have done it. For example, between 2011 and 2014, the United Kingdom ran a red tape challenge. And this resulted in, out of 21,000 statutory rules and regulations, excluding tax and national security, over 2,200 were scrapped or improved. And I also think that we should try and sort of be imaginative and think out of the box when we approach regulation. By this, I mean, for example, if you look at the jurisdiction in Canada, it requires that one regulation be removed, one unnecessary regulation be removed for every new regulation that is introduced. I think this will make us all to be more considerate. And then, of course, it's not really for this committee, but it belongs to the Department of Small Business Development and maybe their committee too, that would like to urge that the National Small Business Council be set up as quickly as possible so that we have a voice. What the council is envisaged to do, it is envisaged to be an advisory council to the Ministry of Small Business, or DTIC before the current arrangement. This would help to institutionalize dialogue and be sensitive and responsive to the voices of the small business ecosystem. Like I said, our strong preference is for making the RIAs mandatory. And we really urge the committee to revisit, to urge the government system and the executive to revisit the implementation and gazetting of Section 18. It will be a very progressive step. In conclusion, Chairperson, thank you for the time. As I said, we're broadly supportive of the bill. We think it's a significant step forward towards creating an the elusive enabling environment, or tackling the disabling environment. And thank you for inviting us. But we do urge you to hear us. We are a segment of the economy that's very important. However, it's also unheard and sometimes unseen. And in approaching the setting up of the authority, we should also be mindful and invest a lot of energy towards ensuring that we get it right, because we know how difficult it is to build new institutions. And I thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Kruger.
Thank you, Mr. Kruger. Can you introduce the second one, second presenter?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Thank you, John, for the very affirmative presentation. The next association is the Association of Small and Medium Enterprises, and the speaker will be Howard Johnson. So, Howard Johnson, if you on the platform, please introduce yourself, and then you can carry on with your presentation. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Good morning, everybody. Let me just get my video on. Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Jay, Mr. Kruger, Hena, for inviting me to this platform to speak about small business and also to offer our support. To offer support to the small business bill, the ease of doing business. Just some quick information. Sorry, I'm getting a bit of feedback. Just some quick information about who we are. We were originally called SASMIF, and now we have rebranded to SASMEA, the South African Small Medium Enterprise Association. Essentially, what we do is we work with sectors and territories. So our members are made up from individuals, business from different sectors, and of course from different territories. So I just took this off just to make it a bit easier to communicate here. So in terms of TASMEA and what we are trying to achieve and what we have been trying to achieve for the past 10 years of operation, it has come into more effect now, of course, with the bill that has now been proposed, where a lot of our objectives are kind of been highlighted in the bill itself. So firstly, you know, in terms of what it is that we are trying to achieve, it's obviously the red tape reduction has become a huge issue for many of our members. And I think that with a bill like this, to be able to make it easier for organizations to have access to markets, have access to funding, and of course, to be able to just cut through the red tape will make things a lot easier. Something that we also support is that to have one department, obviously, to represent SMEs. So to have one department where you go to, these organizations have. And that department actually deals with the various departments, because we often find that government departments act in silos, and sometimes becomes very difficult to straddle these silos. So to have one department to go to and say, "Do these are concerns, can you please point us in the right direction, or could you please assist with where we need to go?" I think this would actually really help a lot. The other thing also is obviously to have a voice, to be committed, because not only as SASMEA, we have recently formed a larger organization called the SMME Industry Council, and very much in terms of, because one of the objectives that has been called for by SASMEF over the past 10 years is to form the industry council that forms part of the the laws of the constitution. And this has not been achieved yet. And one of the things we've done is we've come together with about 11 different industry and sectorial associations to form an industry council, and one of our first events we'll be having on the 28th of June, which is Monday coming, from 10 to 12 o'clock. And one of our objectives is we're kind of looking at action, you know, instead of the usual talk shops where there's lots of talk and possibilities in terms of what can be done. We want to move to implementation phase. We want to get things moving to show that the SMME on the ground, that, you know, from where we are to what we've done in 6 months' time, what have we achieved, and what has been implemented. And I think with having this bill and to have it in the department as it is noted there, this will really help to go a long way to have these this action committee. Obviously, we're looking for information more about steps and things that is taken in terms of what is happening in the small SME sector. I see our previous speaker, they've got some interesting stats already, but I think, you know, the official in terms of successes, in terms of where business succeed, the 5, 10, 15, 20 year period, and where the drop-offs are and what are the cause of those drop-offs. And just one last thing I'd just like to add to that, my comment we'd like to make on the bill also, is the issue of personal surety, the issue of blacklisting. And this especially refers to companies who have been in existence for businesses who have been in existence for 5, 10, 15 years. And suddenly, because of them signing personal surety, something goes wrong either in the markets or globally, and that affects their markets, which means now suddenly their businesses is affected through no fault of their own. And then what happens suddenly is they are forced to close down, forced to downsize for whatever reason, and then all those personal sureties come into effect. So one of the issues we'd like to be, well, we will be addressing on at the Monday's meeting, is to how do we look at personal sureties? How do we really protect SMMEs? Because I find that once the entity is looked past as an SMME, once the entity is looked past and that small business owner signs personal surety, their entire life livelihood is at stake based on what is happening in the business through no fault of their own. They stand to lose houses, cars, etc. And of course, that has a huge impact in terms of what actually happens. So overall, just in terms of the bill itself, we fully support the bill. And obviously, we are looking forward to further engagement, obviously, that we can, you know, further contribute to what it is that is made further on this platform. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much, Shana Kruger.
Is there anyone, Mr. Kruger? Is
thank
that
you,
all, or
Chair.
Is there another one?
Yes, there's another one, Chair. It is Sake Liga, and the presenter will be Piet Leroux. Piet, if you're on, I can see you on now. The platform is yours. Thank you, Piet.
Thank you, Mr. Kruger. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity. I'd like to make a few brief remarks on why we think this bill is a good idea, and why we'd like to see it further considered in Parliament and by the Portfolio Committee and taken through a course. We think it can make a real difference. And so my purpose this morning will be just to provide the outline of why I think it's, it can make a difference, why I think it should. We'd like to see this go ahead. And then I won't make remarks unless you request me on specific elements of the bill. I think there'll be a public participation process later, and I can do that. But if you want, I can also refer to specific clauses that we have comments on now. But for, let's say, initially, I'll stick to why we think this bill is a good idea. Let me briefly say about Sake Liga. We're a business organization. In English, our name simply means business league. We have about 12,000 members. We have several chambers of commerce affiliated to Sake Liga countrywide. And our purpose is to develop a good environment for business in the interest of a flourishing society. And so we have different areas of policy engagement, also various other things that we do in support of a business environment. We're based in Pretoria, and I'm happy to join you through Skype this morning. I'm looking out my window at the Union Building, but you're in Parliament nicely down there, I think. So, ladies and gentlemen, briefly, the outline of why we support this. First is, making a good regulation, making good policy, making good legislation is the object of all political activities. You want to organize the commons for the common good. And there are some ingredients to making those decisions, some ingredients that are necessary for that mission of good policy formulation to be successful. Some things that have to be taken into consideration is, of course, political objectives. Whatever the parliament or the parties proposing these policies consider to be in the public interest. And that's why they develop this legislation. And then you have to think, well, why does this make society more desirable? But all changes, all new legislation, all new introductions of rules, of course, bring with it a cost. And so there's always this trade-off between the objects to be sought, the objects to be achieved. Whether they will actually be achieved is a separate question from what is the cost of implementing them. And determining the cost of something is in some respects more easy than figuring out whether the policy change will have desirable effects of itself. And so we're accustomed in South Africa to the sectoral and economic impact assessment, the SEIAs. And that gives us limited but some idea of what the policy objectives are and how we think they will translate in society. But the SEIAs are very informal, and they have a very limited bearing on the cost element, the objective element of policy formulation. And this bill is interesting because it suggests that in the presidency, a unit should be established to monitor specifically a very narrow set of constraints to policy formulation, but that is somewhat easier to determine, although it does require specialist input, subject matter specialist. And this is the REIA, this Regulatory Impact Assessment Unit. We think that that is a very good idea because it will provide Parliament and it will provide the public, it will provide businesses with an assessment of what the actual regulatory impact will be. We see examples of this in other countries. South Africa will not be unique if it implements this. Two examples that have been brought to my attention by our researchers include Finland and Australia, where it is mandatory and common for these assessments to be done by units with subject matter specialists. And so let's say, for example, any change to, a business licensing, or let's say a regulatory change proposed with regard to telecoms, or regulation of intellectual property, or any other piece of legislation that has an effect on business, and that's virtually all legislation, will to some degree require businesses, of course, to comply. That compliance comes with a cost. And what we see is that very successfully in Australia and Finland, and possibly other places which we could look to if it's of interest to the committee, we find that this is of great assistance to policymakers to determine the exact wording and extent of the policies. This, and I want to stress, and I think why this bill is interesting and why we'd like to see it go forward is it separates the cost element, the objective cost elements, a little bit from the policy considerations, because it's no use developing a new unit that has to provide additional policy considerations, additional a political weighing off of objectives. Those are the tasks of parliamentarians, of your colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, to determine the policy trade-offs. And it may very well be that even a high regulatory implement cost outcome can be acceptable if the trade-off from a political point of view is acceptable, if it's for any number of reasons, some educational objective or objective justice or objective regarding reform is suitable, then it may very well be acceptable to, even if there is a high cost, let a bill pass. But it is important to have a realistic understanding of that cost. On the other hand, and similarly, sometimes maybe parliamentarians may think this policy bill, for some reason, it is thought to have a high regulatory impact and it's going to cost a lot. But then maybe the Regulatory Impact Assessment Unit can come and say, we actually think that this bill is going to have a lower cost than you think. This is what we estimate the man hours or the cost of this regulatory introduction is going to be. And then parliamentarians and parliament would be in a position to say, oh, well, the cost of this is less even than we anticipated. So cost is not a problem. We now only consider whether this is socially beneficial or not. And this is why this regulatory impact assessment unit is a good idea. We think it's going to aid in decision-making without being prescriptive to parliamentarians. This cannot be the object of this unit. This unit should be to inform the cost consideration. The policy-making is always the purvey or the territory of parliament itself, but parliament can then be informed either to say that the cost is less than we thought or the cost is more than we thought. And that can play a role in determining phasing of regulation. It can play a role in determining whether legislation goes through at all or not. It can determine whether some clauses are adopted or not. Overall, it gives a lot more flexibility and flexibility and fine-tuning ability to Parliament to adjust its policy goals to the requirements and cost implications in practice. And so that probably strengthens, not probably, it definitely strengthens Parliament's hand, and it puts next to the CIAs, which have a role to play regarding the evaluation of often subjective factors, it puts another arrow in the provides additional ammunition for Parliament to figure out whether and to what extent and when bills should be passed or not, because it's an objective cost measurement. In addition to the subjective measurements of CIA, we have objective cost measurements, and these can then be used to inform the ultimate decision-making by Parliament, of course, subject to constitutional requirements. Interestingly, this is not specifically raised, nor is it controversial to say this, but I think it's worth to point out that the constitutionalism, the concept of constitutionalism, requires that the policy making takes serious effort to understand all the possible reasonably obtainable information that can be used in policy formulation. And the introduction of the RIA, this Regulatory Impact Assessment Unit, will strengthen the constitutionalism of the South African legal order, because it will provide easier ways for Parliament to access and understand the implications of the regulations and the laws, the legislation passed by Parliament. So all in all, it strengthens constitutionalism. It supports policy making without being prohibitive. It provides additional information to understand the implications not only for Parliament, but also for businesses and the private sector to compensate where possible. So it's likely to increase the possible scope for legislation at whatever level, but at a lower cost. And so I would like to add our support in principle to this bill. We'd like to see it go ahead, and if required, we're available either now or in future to provide more specific comments.
Thank you, Mr. Kruger. Is there another one?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Pete, for your informative presentation. Chair, the Free Market Foundation was also supposed to be here. I don't know if they, I can't see them, but maybe we must just ask if they are present.
Henry, if you can hear me, it's Chris here from the Free Market Foundation.
Thank you, Chris. Without any time wasted, you can carry on, introduce yourself and your organization, and you can...
Good morning.
Yes, thank you, Chris.
Good morning, Chair, and to the honorable members. Thank you very much for this opportunity for the FMF to contribute and comment on this bill. I just have a few quick remarks, won't take up too much of your time. Also, good morning, of course, to all the other organizations who are here this morning to discuss this bill. The FMF very much is in support of the Ease of Doing Business bill in spirit, and we look forward to contributing more on it. I will just share a few short comments. The FMF is an independent public benefit organization founded in 1975 to promote and foster an open society, the rule of law, personal liberty, and economic and press freedom. Most of the work of the FMF is devoted to promoting economic freedom as the empirically best policy for bringing about economic growth, wealth creation, employment, poverty reduction, and greater human welfare. In 2015, the FMF was awarded the Small Business Promotion Pioneer Award in the Small Business Advocacy category at the Forging Enterprise INSME International SMME Learning Conference in Cape Town. Among reasonable people, the fact that the South African economy is overregulated is an uncontroversial assertion. When the economy is rebuilt, hopefully after COVID-19, widespread deregulation and liberalization must form a central pillar of the agenda. Most policies, including legislation and regulations that affect small businesses, whether directly or indirectly, intentionally or unintentionally, or at least the thinking behind them, are a hangover from the apartheid era and are informed by the authoritarian philosophy of that period. Many of these regulations were designed to keep Black South Africans out of business or to prevent them from expanding their enterprises. A particular problem for Black business people under apartheid was the extensive discretionary authority given to the civil servants. Civil servants had the power to grant or deny business licenses and access to business premises, telephone services, electricity, and many other essentials. At one time, obtaining a simple trading license required more than 30 different approvals. Fortunately, trading license requirements have, with few exceptions, been abolished. As well as countless oppressive compliance laws, there are still hundreds of policies and bureaucratic practices at all levels of government that act as barriers to entry. It is impossible to determine how many potential entrepreneurs could have been prevented from ever getting started because of onerous compliance requirements. Continuing compliance costs represent an additional financial burden to small businesses and are often a factor in business failures. It is impossible to quantify the harm they do since the causes of bankruptcies are seldom documented. Because these economic casualties do not appear in official statistics, they have not received enough attention from policymakers. The result is that far too often policies are enacted without adequate consideration for the high costs they impose on small enterprises and particularly the informal economy. Parliament must start paying special attention to the way it frames executive powers in legislation. As it stands, almost every piece of legislation provides for discretionary powers that are not constrained by substantive criteria, effectively giving officials dictatorial power in situations that come before them. Perhaps more concerning is the open-ended nature of the regulatory power bestowed on ministers in legislation. Regulations nowadays go far beyond their traditional role of technical implementation and enter the realm of substantive law. In other words, ministers are legislating by decree. Discretionary powers must be reined in and subjected to fixed and material criteria. Regulation making powers must either be eliminated entirely or forced back into their appropriate delineated box. It is strongly doubtful whether all new policies have impact assessments accompanying them as required by the 2015 policy. The Constitution 18th Amendment Bill, perhaps the most socioeconomically destructive contemplated legislation, was most certainly not accompanied by any impact assessment. And where impact assessments are conducted and published, they are most universally defective, in practically every case being partial in favor of the policy, being unbalanced in favor of the advocates of the policy, and being intellectually dishonest about the unintended consequences of the policy. We agree that the existing framework is insufficient and welcome the Ease of Doing Business Bill as a way to reform the status quo into an effective regulatory impact assessment framework. I have to apologize if you can hear my dog barking in the background. We have some people doing work at our house. So I'll end on that note. Otherwise, there might be too much noise in the background. The Free Market Foundation thanks you very much for this opportunity to comment, and we look forward to contributing more in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Kruger. Is there another one?
Yes, thank you, Chair, and thank you, Chris, for your presentation. The Exports Exporters Club of Cape Town was also supposed to be on the platform. I don't know if they are on the platform, Chair.
If they are, can they take the platform, please, if they are available?
Chair, it seems like they're not available at the moment, so I can hand it over to you now. That was the Chris Hartung from FMF was then the last speaker on this topic. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Kruger. Honourable members, in today's meeting, we are not expected to take a decision on this presentation made thus far. But what I'm going to do now is to allow honorable members to ask questions where they want. Any member who wants to raise a question should raise the hand in the platform, please. Can I note hands? From Tripe, I see your hand is up.
Thank you very much,
Honorable. You will be followed by Honorable Nduli.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. And then I would like to apologize for not showing my video. Please pardon me for that due to circumstances.
Apology accepted, Honorable Musipe.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chairperson. I've got few questions here. The first one is, what are average compliance costs that a small business has to put up in order to be permitted to do or start business? And what are these costs specifically for other than licensing? Number two, where do the bankrupt business people report they applied? Does the Free Market Foundation, A, document these statistics? If so, number B, what does it do with them? And C, what does it present the statistics or the plight of bankrupt business to relevant government structures? What is the response from government in this case? And the last one, what recourse do small businesses have when they are not timely paid by big businesses for the SBI to represent their needs and interests? Must small business be affiliated to the SBI? What happens if they are not affiliated? Thank you so much. Chairperson.
Honorable Nduli, take the platform.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I don't have any questions, but I've got a comment. Chair and the meeting, greetings to everyone. I wanted to commend these associations to come forth in support of this private members bill, to show that we are on the same battlefield as them, fighting for the good of the people of South Africa. But in particular, in dealing and fighting with the silent killers, which are invisible scourges for small and developing businesses. Indeed, Chair, there is a lot of that has been done. We are happy as the committee to see that the business fraternity is up to look for their own. Of course, nothing about us, without us. There is a work in progress, and we hope that their contribution from Mr. Kruger, because they are supporting what Mr. Kruger had put forth, that this work will help maybe crossing the T's and putting the dots, so that the small businesses and developing businesses begin to sell as smoothly as we are all expecting. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ntuli. Can I invite Honorable Lesom?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and colleagues. Good morning, and the presenters, and joined by Mr. Honorable Kruger. I must say that I was just watching that this committee is so nice, Mr. Honorable Kruger. We allow an honorable member to co-chair with the chair of the committee on a lighter note, because that's what I've observed. I thought I just need to just say that. But also, it's a demonstration that we're a very cooperative, allowing groupings or individuals to express their views freely. And we are indeed a very listening committee, speaking for this committee. Having said that, Chair, all the presentations from the first one to the last one, I didn't hear, probably Honorable Kruger will assist me on this one. What was the response? Because I know that you are not presenting this member's bill for the first time. It went to the small business, which is a portfolio committee that is dedicated to oversight on the small business ministry or department, as it were. What is the rationale, and what was their response to the private member's bill of your good self, Honorable Kruger? True, Chair. Are we suggesting, is a general one, because all speakers seem to speak on that without being explicit, that government must stop doing its own assessment, which is housed in the presidency, must allow a free ride for all? And what are you suggesting? What will happen to the government employees that are there? Because at the same breath, which means you are speaking from both sides of your mouth, you are also mooting that there must be a newly established department, a unit, as it were. Thirdly, Chair, which will be my last question, sort of a comment, that indirectly, I want confirmation, we are saying that the government must restructure its department to accommodate your view, because I think the rationale, not even I think, I believe very strongly that the present administration have a good economic business IQ when we establish the portfolio committee that deals with small business, so that it is a dedicated attention, but also the ministry. The sub of that is that all departments, constitutionally and otherwise, because the constitution also indicates that the president appoints the minister, which means there is a very explicit that all of them, anyway, they do and execute their responsibilities as mandated and expected by the president through the constitution. But also, I didn't hear you talking about, Honorable Kruger now, about the role of deputy president's office that is also charged by taking care or looking after and responsible for government business, as it were, which among other things is the internal workings of the ministers in terms of executing their responsibilities other than the portfolio committee. That would be my question, Chair, by closing to say that all departments are come to Parliament through various committees. Are you suggesting that everything must be housed in the presidency? And how are you not creating an unintended booking nights? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Somo. I will start with you, Honorable Kruger. Give your own responses to the question asked so far.
Yes, yes, thank you, Chair, and thank you for the question. Yes, I think if you go through the bill itself, as the bill, it's not intended to change government or change the working of the government. The bill is only proposed that the unit, one unit, must be established in the department, in the presidency, that can monitor, identify, and work on the cost of red tape so that we can reduce red tape for small businesses. So no way is the intention to undermine government as it is at the moment. We need to reduce red tape. We need to reduce administration cost. We need to reduce compliance cost. And as all the previous speakers mentioned it, small businesses are hindered by red tape. And every year, you will see if you look at the ease of doing business index of the World Bank, you will see our position declined every year. So it becomes worse and worse and worse every year with exactly the same government and the same government interventions at the moment. So what the bill seeks to do is to reduce red tape, especially for small businesses. But it will also have then this window, this broken window effect. If we reduce red tape for small businesses, it will also benefit big business as well. And it will also benefit individuals, you know, civil society. For instance, if you want to go to the bank and do your personal banking transactions, it will also help eventually to reduce that red tape, you know, when you do your own businesses. So the whole idea, as I say, Chair, is just to establish a unit in the presidency that can look after it. And the idea is that it has some teeth from the president itself so that we can implement the principles of this unit. I hope that answered the question. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kruger. Fakeliha, can you come in? Reply to the question raised to you.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the questions. I will briefly say that I think that I think it is Honorable Soma who referred to whether this will, what the impact will be on current assessments within government. To my mind, this is something that is complementary and will be under the direction of government. It will be in the presidency. So I think the not only is it not possible for this to have an intention of being not in support of government, but I think that to my mind, the unit that is to be established can just as well be current existing employees. And the details of the bill is not as important to me right now as the intention of introducing into the decision-making process of Parliament and government the easy to access cost estimates by subject matter experts. If we have that, we currently do not have it. So if we have, not only will government, but also Parliament be in a better position to prioritize, phase, and structure legislation without any impact on the political priorities of government. I think it's important that this unit should not be politically prescriptive. It should only provide information to policymakers to decide what and how they want to achieve something with a better basis in information. This will be complementary to existing assessments done, whether with CIAS or otherwise in government or in the departments. But it does offer something we do not have currently, which is objective, easy to access, standardized cost estimates. In man hours or in rand and cent terms. It adds information to a decision-making process. It does not replace a decision-making process, nor is it prohibitive or prescriptive to government. I think that would not be acceptable if that was the case, but we support this because it is not the case.
Free Market Foundation? There's no one from Free Market Foundation to respond to questions raised. Honorable members, thank you, Honorable Kruger. Honorable members, it seems we have now concluded presentation, as I said in the beginning, in today's meeting.
Chair, I've got my hand again, Chair.
Okay.
My apology, I didn't wanted to interject you.
Okay.
I thought we're about to conclude. Chair, I'll make an assumption here that the question that I thought is fundamental to inform the committee when it decides how to manage the Honorable Kruger's members' bill is the question that I raised deliberately, because it will assert one that says that what did the Small Business Portfolio Committee said, and because all the speakers, by the way, Chair, spoke about small businesses through and through, which I really accept that. But also they didn't even appreciate that during COVID-19, the economic stimulus that government set aside, the most of the businesses, small businesses that benefited from that was the mainline small businesses, as it were. Even the minister herself did also admitted that. That seeks to suggest that the financial institutions also, they are not transformative as it were, as one would have thought they should be. And I heard that there's one organization that says that they are not controversial. I thought they were going also to speak to that one to say they appreciate that effort that has been made, notwithstanding that the intention of government is to change the patterns of economic benefit and its picture to make sure that it reflects all the demographics of the country. But I think it's a step in a good direction from my side, and I thought all the speakers should have appreciated that, other than directing us to government to have a unit. But I do get their logic, and I noted the logic that informs their stance as well. Thank you very much, Chair. But I just observing that they just avoided that, and I wanted just to register that I've noted that. unfortunately, it's not going to assist me when I engage on the actual way forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Soma. I see Bapiti Zuzu, and then Howard Johnson will follow thereafter. Come in, Mr. Zuzu.
Thank you, Chair. There was a question given to post directly to SBI, I think, by the Honorable Mutsipe about the compliance costs. According to the study that we shared with you, tackling the disabling environment, it's between 4 to 6% of turnover for SMEs. It could be worse than that for an informal sector operator or those gig economies. The other study, which is a little bit older, said a typical SME owner spends up to 9 working days a month complying with a variety of legislation, bylaws, and policies. Now, obviously, that's quite a long time. Our preference as SBI is that SME owners spend time at work with their suppliers, with their customers, with their employees, instead of running around. That's why organizations like us sort of exist, to sort of speak on their behalf. Let me address another question, which was around what happens when business does not pay on time. So we've got a system which is twofold. The first one is, which we started implementing last year, was to name and fame, which is to acknowledge the good work that has been done by big businesses in committing publicly to paying SMEs on time. What happens to those that do not pay on time? We are working on a shaming platform with an organization that will, the organization has already started the technological platform of these platforms where SMEs can go and anonymously report that they haven't been paid by so-and-so. And the idea is to shame and publicly shame that entity, that big entity. Obviously, where there has been a bit of lag, and I'm not saying I'm bad-mouthing anyone here, it was very disappointing that we couldn't, hard as we tried, to get SOEs and state departments to participate in the campaign, we couldn't get traction. Hopefully in the next phase of the campaign, not only do we get more big businesses signing up onto the campaign to pay SMEs on time, which is within 30 days, which is government policy, that will also get government departments, the National Treasury, DSPD, the Public Service and Administration Department to sort of to give the campaign traction. No, we do not only assist SMEs that are affiliated to us. During COVID, we're just a go-to voice for everyone, whether it was members or non-members. By the way, membership to SBI is free of charge, so there's nothing to be gained. We just don't have enough resources, but we did help and assist as many as we could under the circumstances. I thank you, Mr. Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Howard Johnson. Come in. Mr. Howard Johnson, the floor is yours now.
Sorry, Chair. Hi. Yes, thank you very much. Thank you very much for taking my comments, Chair. I just want to reiterate, you know, that SAFIA, we have an objective to develop the ecosystem between SMEs, government, and big business. And, you know, real engagement with real outcomes, and that's what we're looking to achieve. So So we want to work with government, but we need a point of contact that will understand SMMEs and understand the environment in which SMMEs operate, and especially that will also then understand what the red tape is that hinders SMME growth. We also therefore look at here to explore SMMEs having or joint associations having a seat at NEDLAC, so that the SMME's voice can really be amplified and heard in terms of what it is that is happening when decisions are made. I must also just very briefly point out, you know, we can only measure success when the socioeconomic conditions within entire communities are transformed. Then we can say what we have implemented has been successful, and not just for one or two small businesses in the community and say we have helped that business and this business. But when the entire community is transformed and uplifted, then we can say what it is we are trying to achieve on this platform and as associations is that we have actually achieved our objectives. So it basically means that, you know, with the growth of SMMEs, there will be a greater taxable income and there will be transformed community. The goal basically is to create sustainable jobs and to alleviate poverty. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Mastole, is there any other item on the agenda?
No, Chairperson.
Okay. Let me thank the honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, for availing themselves for this meeting today. Thank you very much. As I said in the beginning, we are not expected to take a decision on your presentations today. Thank you very much. We have heard your presentation. Therefore, the meeting is now adjourned.
Chair, before adjourned, if I may ask, Chair.
Ask Ms. Olson.
Okay, my apology, Chair. Thank you very much for your kindness and your understanding. When are we going to be concluding in terms of our view as the committee in all the presentations that we have received? If I may suggest, Chair, and use the recess time, it will be proper then probably next week, then the committee then as directed by our last meeting in this engagement, that we come back then and we apply our minds and then we make a determination moving forward. That will be my appeal, Chair. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I was going to deal with that outside this platform with the committee secretary, and then committee secretary communicate with all the members. I was going to do that, exactly what you are raising, Honorable Song. Having said that, therefore, the meeting has now come to an end. Thank you very much for gracing this meeting.
Speedy recovery, Chair, from the flu.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Stay safe, everybody.
I have a
sanitize, use mask.